Eventually, the rumbling winds passed, and the companions slowly eased their hands away from their faces to fill their aching lungs with the clean, fresh air blowing in from the desert. Dusted white from the billowing salt, Ryan blinked hard to clear his vision and could finally see again. The building under their boots still shook slightly, but the salt dome was gone, exposing something from another world. It was a pre-dark city. The companions were standing on top of a skyscraper that rose above a perfectly preserved town that appeared to stretch for dozens of blocks in every direction, maybe more. The city filled a circular depression in the ground, edged by a sheer rock wall that rose to the desert floor above them. For a moment, Ryan had a rush of vertigo as he adapted to the fact that he had fallen down to land high in the sky. White salt clouds moved like fog along the streets, and a raging fire burned out of control in an intersection where a gasoline tanker had been flattened by the plummeting tons of the falling dome. Doc turned around in a circle in unabashed wonder.
By the three Kennedys, it is as if we have traveled backward in time.
A pre-dark city. Not a ruin, but the whole damn thing.
Walking to a corner of the roof, Ryan looked out across the nameless Texas city. The skyscraper they were on was in the middle of the sprawling metropolis, near some sort of an open stadium, dust clouds still billowing inside, resembling a winter snowstorm.
A sinkhole.
The one-eyed man had seen something similar before, but never anything on this scale. It was staggering.
Must have been caused by the first nukes. Sometimes the land just cracks apart. Sometimes it rises into new mountains or mazes, and sometimes falls into the earth, like this.
I remember seeing pictures in Time magazine about a mining village in Pennsylvania. Almost the same damn thing as this happened. A section of ground dropped out from under the folks like an elevator, removing the heart of the city. Only it didn't drop nice and even like this. It was sharply tilted. Took the Army Corps of Engineers a week to rescue everybody while it continued to slowly descend.
Is that happening here? Are we still going down?
No, we're stationary.
Christy's fiery hair slowly uncoiled from the startling sight of the city. She wanted to refer to them as ruins, but the buildings were in perfect condition, aside from some minor damage caused by the falling dome. A few of the larger chunks had hit the streets below and not broken apart, the slabs of pristine white salt scattered about like pieces of an eggshell amid the homes and office buildings.
But how do you know for sure?
Ever since Zero City, and then the cliffs of the Marshall Islands, Dean had been developing a hatred of high places.
No elevator feeling gut. Remember how feeling would die when go fast? Not here.
Dean frowned, then nodded and exhaled deeply as the tension eased from his face.
Gotcha. Right, no problem.
Turning slowly to wreck the roof, Ryan paused and pulled out his 6-hour.
Who the hell is that?
He pointed to a pair of legs sticking out from behind the brick kiosk of the rooftop stairwell entrance. Drawing weapons, the companions advanced fast, then holstered their blasters when they saw the face of the person. The skin was dried like jerky, eyes gone, and lips pulled back in a rictus of death. Yet the clothing was in good shape, leather shoes without holes in the soles, pants and shirt, and a shiny wrist cron along with a gold wedding ring.
Well, I'll be damned.
Mildred crouched alongside the desiccated being. The flesh was wizened and now dark brown in color from sheer age, the original race of the person hidden by the passing of the long decades. The clothes appeared to be casual, but with matching stripes on the sides and cuffs. Some kind of a uniform, but not the police or firefighters. Maybe a paramedic? There was a tool belt with a cell phone and an electronic clipboard and some weird pliers that were vaguely familiar to the physician. Then she saw a plastic name tag pinned to the shirt, the photo and card inside the clear material, easily readable as the day it had been issued.
It's a cable repair man.
Of all the people to find from the lost world, it would have to be a damn cable TV guy. Then she looked again at the photo ID and corrected herself.
Excuse me, cable TV woman. Sorry, Sheila.
Somebody important?
Dean inspected the wrist cron to see if it still worked. However, the timepiece was digital, the powerful long-life batteries inert for a century.
Depends on your priorities. She was a television technician.
Woman. Hard to tell.
Everything shrinks with age.
Dark night. There's more. Thousands of them.
Standing at the cornice of the building, one boot resting on the low ledge, JB was using the telescope to scan the metropolis below.
The streets are littered with people. They're behind the steering wheels of the cars and trucks, in the shops. They're everywhere.
Ryan absentmindedly rubbed his jaw.
The entire population of a pre-dark city, as well preserved as the city itself.
This was something horribly new to him. He had seen death 1,000 times and killed about that many in battle. But this was beyond imagination. The sheer scope of the death toll was unnerving, staggering. 100,000 corpses? 1,000,000? There was no way to tell. He had known since childhood that billions died in Skydark. But to now see them laid out all around like autumn leaves brought the volume of the destruction alive in his heart. What kind of madmen had brought about this level of destruction to their own people, their own world? Christie spread her arms as if to embrace the entire city.
Gaia rest their souls.
Amen. Requiescat in pace.
Requiescat in pace.
Staying resolute, the rest of the companions said nothing. They were also affected by the City of the Dead, but refused to be rattled. JB rubbed his nose, trying to change the dark mood.
Well, this certainly caused a stink. When the Salt Dome cracked, it released a graveyard fumes of 1,000,000 corpses, stored for 100 years.
I'm surprised we survived. The methane levels alone should have killed us.
The irregular cracking of the dome must have forced most of the dead air skyward, channeling it away from us.
Explosions of any kind were home turf to the Armorer.
That would explain it.
Just then, Ryan gave a sharp whistle and pointed to the north with one hand while brushing back his black hair with the other.
We got company. The Corps just arrived.
Facing that way, the companions could see small figures moving along the edge of the rocky cliff.
Bet they're triple angry over this.
Dean pulled his Browning high power and briefly checked the blaster. It was dusted with salt, but the rack worked fine, and the clip slid in and out without hindrance.
They did tell us not to enter the Forbidden Zone. Their chief must be insane with rage over this transgression.
As if in reply, one of the Corps threw a spear, but it traveled less than a block, then arched down into the street and out of sight.
Think that was Alar?
Sure as hell wasn't Klar.
On impulse, Ryan brought up his Stire and worked the arming bolt. Almost immediately, the Corps scattered, diving into the loose sand and out of sight.
Think they read my mind?
Ryan still looked through the crosshair scope of the Stire. The walnut stock felt gritty beneath his cheek, and his view of the desert was obscured slightly from the still-rising salt mist. He could taste the air, and it was thick and foul as swamp water.
Nah, I think they just saw the sunlight glint off the long blaster and figured out lead was headed their way. Any doomie able to read thoughts at this range would have known we were planning on escaping and would have stopped us.
True enough.
Ryan then fired twice at a movement below the sands.
But now they're not so sure, and that could buy us some time to get off the roof.
Heading to the door of the rooftop kiosk, JB checked the lock and found it was open. The stairwell beyond was pitch black, and the air carried a stale, almost metallic odor. Readying their weapons, the companions lit candles and entered the kiosk to start descending into the bowels of the dark skyscraper. With Ryan in the lead, the companions started down the stairs in single file, the flickering candles throwing distorted shadows on the walls. Almost immediately, they encountered another dried corpse, this one wearing a silk suit with a Palm Pilot personal computer still clutched in its hand. Kicking aside the body, Ryan kept onward, the Sig Sauer steadily searching for targets. Just because everybody in the city was long chilled, sure as hell didn't mean the place was safe. Maybe the bodies weren't desiccated from the radiation and salt, but from some mutie that sucked them dry. A soft moaning could be heard. Ryan froze in the darkness as his combat instincts kicked in. Then he felt the gentle breeze moving against his face, and realized it was only the desert wind moving through the city and blowing into the broken windows. What glass hadn't been broken when the new quake dropped the city down a couple of 100 feet had to have sure as shit broken when the dome collapsed. Reaching the 10th floor, the door to that level was propped open by a woman in a flower print dress. Beyond, they could see an office with cubicles and desks. A rustling noise, very reminiscent of bats, could faintly be heard. JB swung his Uzi machine pistol out of the way and pulled out his S&W scatter gun, racking the shotgun for immediate action. The Uzi threw a lot of lead, but bats were small and fast, often carrying rabies or the black cough. The only cure for that was a bullet from a friend. Quickly passing Dean her candle, Mildred pulled out her flashlight and pumped the lever-like handle on the survival device a few times to charge the battery inside, then clicked the switch. A pale yellow beam came from the flashlight, but it was still stronger than the dancing flames of the tallow candles. Playing the beam about, the woman saw the papers on the desks fluttering from the breeze, coming through the smashed windows.
Nothing. It's clear.
Ryan continued downward, but kept a watchful eye on the high ceiling above them for any suspicious movements. Bats and rats were a constant danger in any pre-dark ruin, and... Fire blast. These weren't ruins. He had better remember that. This dead town was unique in his travels, and nothing Ryan had ever seen before had truly prepared him for this.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
In a world plagued by terrorism, drastic times call for drastic measures. To fight America's invisible enemies, an agency is needed that isn't exactly bound by the rules. Stony Man. Only from Cutting Audio.